Welcome to the Weekend Writing Podcast,
where writers read flash fiction. I'm Sylvain Drake.
And I'm John Nedwill. Are you all right, Sylvain?
Just feeling the after effects of a bout of something.
I hope you're not infectious.
No, not anymore. I'm not. See?
That's good, because today we're having an open house in the Weekend Writing virtual studio.
Oh, who's on the guest list?
Well, we have Joyce Holt, Thomas Nielsen, and Tom Walburn turning up.
That's not so much an open house, that's a full house. Well, you'd better open up and let people in.
In the studio today, as well as myself and Sylvain, today we have Weekend Writing regulars Joyce Holt, Thomas Nielsen, and Tom Walburn. Welcome to the studio, people.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
It's great to have you guys. I'm going to say for this April Fool's episode on April 1st, we've invited people to share a story, but also a joke. I'm going to lead off with a joke just to get the mood going. I have some food jokes for our viewers here. Did you hear about the restaurant on the moon?
No.
No.
There's great food, but no atmosphere.
Oh.
And I'm going to sneak in a related one. What do you call a fake noodle?
Atmosphere.
An impasta.
Oh.
Those are dad jokes.
Those are dad jokes, aren't they? What is that? What makes it a dad? Is it the delivery, the type of joke, the setup that makes it a dad joke?
No, it's if people groan.
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's good. Well, Joyce, do you want to tell us a little bit about your story and launch into it?
For the prompt, in 500 words, tell a story in which a character hears the same message for a third time. Here is Freckles and Bronze by Joyce Holt. The sun blazed overhead, beating without mercy, as Kinnan toiled up the naked mountainside. Charcoal burners had hewn down acres of forest here. With each footstep, the odor of charred wood spiked the air. New growth, hip high, offered no shade. Sweat stung Kinnan's eyes and soaked his linen under tunic. He didn't dare strip down in the open, though. The sun has no mercy for fair, freckled skin. As soon as Kinnan reached the forest verge, he slung his belongings to the ground, stripped his woolen tabard, and rolled up his linen sleeves. With the last glance at the path behind, Kinnan caught sight of a glint on the ground. He stooped to examine a small object in the dirt. A ring. A fine golden ring. Who in these wild parts could have dropped such a treasure? Everyone knew about the Spanish princess being regaled at the king's estate here on the Welsh coast. Had a royal hunting party come this way? And here he was, a lowly kennelman, on a hunt of a different kind. Perhaps if he returned the trinket, he'd win a reward. Kinnan grinned, reached down, and took the cool metal ring between thumb and forefinger. "Higher!" piped a thin voice from the shadows. "Higher!" trilled another from the depths of the woods. "Higher?" Kinnan gulped and looked up. Nothing to see but leaves. Shrill laughter resounded from all directions. "Higher! We said higher! Thou hast taken the pay. Now thou must earn thy hire. The Queen of Pixies has need of thy service. Come!" Kinnan stumbled along after half-seen figures flitting through the deep woods, afraid to back out of the deal he'd unwittingly entered. Better to serve quickly and be done than to offend any fae, however small. "What service does her grace desire of me?" Kinnan called. "An ogre! An ogre! Save us from the ogre!" Kinnan faltered. "I am no warrior. I carry no arms but a poor bronze dagger and a broken flint knife." "Thou hast taken the queen's gold. Thou wilt earn thy hire." Kinnan thought to toss the ring and flee, and be pursued by a mob of furious pixies. Better to face the ogre. His guides hovered at the entrance to a dim green grotto veiled by brush and thicket. "Thou must not bear arms," one cried from the grotto. Kenan unbuckled his belt and let his dagger drop to the ground. "Thou must not bear arms," sang another from the right. He tossed aside his flint knife. From the left echoed, "Thou must not bear arms." Kenan planted hands on hips. "Then how am I to battle the ogre?" Laughter pealed. "Thou must not bear arms, for nettles and thorns do beset our path." Red with embarrassment, Kenan rolled down his sleeves, retrieved his blades, and plunged into the grotto. Thus did Kenan the kennelman not only save the pixies from a small, noisy, hairy, fearsome ogre, but fulfill his own quest of returning to the visiting princess, her lost cocker spaniel.
Was this based on any kind of, like, true fairy tale, or was it a fabricated fairy tale?
Fabricated.
Yes, but it's got all the classic elements in it.
Fairies, double meanings. Very, very sweet. Very sweet ending.
Thank you.
We didn't really talk about if there's any, like, large commentary. Oh, and like any kind of structure to commentary. But does anyone else have any other thoughts about the story?
Well, I liked it. It had several elements in it. It was multi-layered, as I think you already mentioned. The obvious element is that it matched the prompt, the request for three statements, very well. And with a twist to it. I like that. But I like the twist at the end with the, it took me, I had to read that last paragraph twice, I confess, to relate that the Cocker Spaniel was actually the ogre. But it was well done.
Depending on how you feel about small dogs.
Mm. Well, if you're a small pixie, it's probably a pretty fearsome creature.
Yes, indeed.
They're fearsome creatures anyway, if you're full size. Ever been slobbered on by one?
Our neighbors across the street had several small dogs they did not train. And every now and then they'd get out. One day they were rushing and barking and nipping at a pedestrian's ankles. And he was dancing and dancing, trying to get away from them. So yeah, little ones can sometimes be fiercer than big ones.
Yes, they have to be. They have to be to get along in the dog world. Do you have a joke for us, Joyce?
Oh, yes. How many mystery riders does it take to change a light bulb?
We don't know. How many mystery riders does it take to change a light bulb?
Two. One to change the bulb and the other to give it an unexpected twist at the end.
Oh.
Oh, how about, okay, one more. Why did Shakespeare always write with a quill pen?
I don't know.
Pencils were so confusing to him. To be or not to be.
Oh.
I'd heard the light bulb twist one, but I hadn't heard the Shakespeare one before.
Oh.
Very good. All right, I will read my story. I still have a little tiny bit of hoarseness from my recent COVID that I've now thankfully recovered from. So apologize for that. Okay. So this is the title of this story is G&G, and it was the prompt was Plan B.
I remember that prompt.
Yes. Yeah. It's rare for us to have sort of a two-part prompt in a way. Okay. Bring the G&G for Plan B. Ernie repeated the little rhyme to himself. Ralph had made it up so Ernie wouldn't forget his role in the heist. Luckily, Ernie had no trouble finding all the supplies Ralph had requested at the Five and Dime store. Now he stood patiently, twisting and untwisting the plastic shopping bag around his wrist and chewing a big wad of strawberry-flavored gum while Ralph worked. In his other hand, Ernie fingered the other two packs of gum in his pocket, one watermelon and the other regular bubblegum flavor. He decided he would try the regular gum once the piece in his mouth ran out of flavor. "Ernie," hissed Ralph, kneeling in front of the safe with a stethoscope against the lock. "Yeah, boss," answered Ernie. "Do Do you have to chomp so loudly on that god-awful smelling gum? I'm trying to open a safe here, if you haven't noticed. No, boss. Ernie swallowed the gum and tried to stand still. A few minutes later, he quietly popped another piece of bubblegum in his mouth. He bit down silently and was rewarded with a burst of sweet sugar. The minutes ticked by. Ernie could see a patch of sweat form on Ralph's back. After what felt like an eternity, the dial on the safe made an audible click. Ralph looked up at Ernie, grinning. And now we take these lovelies and sneak out of here without activating the motion sensors. Ralph held up a diamond necklace he had pulled out of the safe. Ernie nodded enthusiastically, but didn't say anything because he had shoved two more pieces of gum in his mouth while he had been waiting. The gems sparkled like nothing Ernie had ever seen before. They would be rich now. Ernie imagined a life of leisure lying by a pool in a mansion. Careful now, said Ralph, pointing to the right and left where red lights indicated a series of motion detector tripwires along the floor. Step over each of these very carefully. Ernie followed Ralph's lead, taking great pains to avoid triggering the alarm. They were just inches from the door when, without thinking, Ernie blew an enormous bubble, which popped with a loud snap in Ralph's ear. Ralph yelped, tripped, and dropped the necklace. Ernie tried to grab it, but instead fell on top of Ralph. A piercing siren began to wail, and a second later, footsteps could be heard in the corridor. Quick, Ernie, yelled Ralph, scrambling to his feet. Plan B. Ernie reached into the bag and pulled out two gorilla masks. He pulled one over his face and tossed the other to Ralph, who did the same. Then Ernie pulled the remaining pieces of gum and a handful of empty wrappers out of his pocket and offered them to Ralph. What's this? Asked Ralph, looking confused. G&G for Plan B, said Ernie. Gorilla mask and gum. Gun, you moron, shouted Ralph, not gum. Oops, said Ernie as the security guards burst in.
I like how you set that up for Ernie's level of intelligence by having the rhyme at the very beginning, if I can remember.
I can certainly see Guy Ritchie making a movie out of this one.
Yeah, yeah. It felt like a little bit of a movie, a comedy movie scene.
I'll just add to what Joyce said and say there's nothing like Chekhov's gun for signaling the start of a story and the end of it, is there?
I realized when I was choosing a story, I write a lot of stories about fools that have similar types of themes. So it was pretty easy for me to find an April Fool's story. The comedy, the light comedy. Very good. Well, I already shared my joke. We can move on to Tom.
Okay. Well, let's see. I didn't have a joke as per se as much as a prank for April Fool's Day. I pass it on to you and you can all try it if you think. So I've been told about this, but I haven't tried it myself. And that is when you have someone that you want to prank who drinks a lot of water, get out a bottle of water, plastic bottle of water. Don't open it, but take a tiny pin and make a couple holes around the circumference of the bottle and then just leave it sitting there. When he grabs it, he's going to have to squeeze it in order to get the top off, and it's going to spurt water all over wherever the holes are.
Ooh, messy.
You don't want to do that near some fancy electronics.
I can imagine a lot of ways that can go wrong.
And you don't want to be near them when they do it either, just in case they twig that it's you.
Mm-hmm. Probably a good point, John. Yes. All right. My story is called Melt, and it's from back in the write-on days. And I'm sorry, the Amazon write-on days. And I think the prompt was probably Melt, but I didn't put that at the end of my document like I usually do. Second-year intern Alice Morgan listened to her voicemail and cursed under her breath. Dr. Morgan, your Melt's patient has arrived and has been waiting for you. It had been an unusually busy morning and showed no signs of slowing down. And what the hell was a Melt protocol, anyways? There were so many acronyms used in the medical field that it was like a foreign language. The nurses would help, of course. They knew everything. But to Alice, asking for help was a sign of weakness. She shared that particular trait with her male colleagues. Maybe it was a surgeon thing, she mused. Fortunately, she'd been collecting terms whenever she ran across them. As she rushed down to admitting to collect her patient, she pulled out her smartphone. Siri, check my notes for the MELT protocol. She listened briefly and then snapped on a fresh pair of gloves as she entered the exam room. After she finished, she went to find the patient's wife. Mrs. Johnson, everything went well. Your husband is resting now and will be ready to go in about a half an hour. Mrs. Johnson seemed a little confused that he would need to rest after the test. Dr. Morgan thought that she was probably about 70 and just attributed that to the confusion. 3 weeks later, Alice was paged to the exam room. One of the regular nurses was there with Mrs. Johnson. Dr. Morgan, Mrs. Johnson has some questions about how her husband's test came out. Well, the wife said, I wanted to report on his most recent activity, too, in case it could have an impact on your diagnosis. He's been very strange lately. I came home from Bridge Club recently to find him sitting on the couch, watching TV in his underwear. He's leaving dirty clothes all over the house, and he never puts a toilet seat down anymore. Does that mean he's getting dementia? Dementia? Dr. Morgan said the word out loud. Doctor, perhaps we could have a word outside? The nurse asked. When they were out in the hall, the nurse said, Mr. Johnson came in for a Meltz test a couple of weeks ago, but I cannot find his test results in his chart. Yes, I performed the Melt procedure, Morgan confirmed. Lowercase Melt or all caps? The nurse wanted to know. The patient was supposed to have a memory expansion learning test to rule out possible dementia, the nurse said. What did you do? I did a masculinity enhancement, level 3. We have to let Mrs. Johnson know, the nurse said. And I'm very sorry for the mix-up. It should wear off in a couple more weeks. It's going to wear off? Oh, dear, Mrs. Johnson said somewhat timidly. Her face was very pink. I can put up with the dirty laundry all over and the toilet seat up. It's just that for the last couple of weeks, unexpectedly, she giggled. The nights have been pretty amazing.
That's such a good one.
Having worked in healthcare for over 20 years, I can attest to the fact that there's too many acronyms and they make new acronyms and it is easy to get them mixed up. So it's very believable in that regard.
I just find it interesting that so far, of the stories we've had, three of them, have relied on misunderstandings.
Yes.
Good point.
There's a theme, yeah. As if we planned it that way.
Yeah, I think it's strange. I'm wondering if it's something that flash fiction writers indulge in a lot.
I think, well, in pursuit of the twist, it's definitely one mechanism where you can create a twist.
I've heard that most problems in interpersonal relations come from miscommunication.
So. It's true. And conflict is, good to have in a story, some kind of miscommunication conflict. All right. So Thomas, you said you were going to read to us, this is an excerpt from a longer piece. Is that right?
Yes, it is. It's an old challenge, actually, where I was challenged to write something really disturbing. And I already had this tiny little piece, which I used to sort of pivot it around. So the disturbing part I will spare you. That is, I think some of you have already read it. It is pretty cruel, but this tiny little piece, I think, is family safe.
Well, that sounds great. And do you have any April Fool's jokes for us?
Well, not really, but I do have a small anecdote,
which
I thought was funny. When we were on a trip once with our grandkid, he was about 4 or 5 years old, we stopped on the way for a hot dog. And this old man at the hot dog stand, he asked him what he wanted in his hot dog. And he just looked up at him with a very mystified look and said, well, a sausage.
Trust a five-year-old to get the essentials right.
Yes. You want a hot dog with your hot dog. You don't want anything else. Maybe ketchup.
Depends whether you come from Pittsburgh or Chicago, in my experience.
True, but in Denmark, we actually put absolutely everything you can even get out of a grocery store into hot dogs.
Oh, really?
I don't blame you. I know exactly what you mean, because I love to load them up myself with anything I can.
Peanut butter?
All right, we need to take a sidetrack of what exactly goes on a hot dog for John and Thomas here. See who has more toppings on a standard afternoon.
Start off with ketchup, mustard, sauerkraut.
Yeah, we don't use sauerkraut. We use a pickled cucumber.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
we call that relish. I think we call that relish.
I'd add onions as well.
Yes, both raw and roasted.
I prefer mine grilled, but yep. And I'll put fried mushrooms on top of it.
Oh, that's a new one.
You haven't mentioned cheese yet.
I don't think I've seen that in Denmark.
Or chili. I haven't mentioned chili either.
Chili cheese dog?
Yum.
That's a good option.
It's gross. It's really gross. Regional toppings, Thomas, for the hot dog?
Well, we've got something called amuleta, which is piccalilli. Is that piccalilli? Chopped pickles?
Piccalilli, mustard, cauliflower, and pickles. Yes.
And when you then mix that with a bit of mayonnaise and some spices, you've got remoulade, which is what we use.
Oh, stop it. Well. You're making me hungry.
I think we're due for a hot dog party.
I think we better.
We can write a hot dog party.
Oh dear. I'm sorry, as a Discordian, I have to say that it is still a mystery why hot dogs are sold in packages of 6, yet hot dog buns come in packages of 8.
So you have to buy multiples of both. Excellent marketing scheme. Okay, but we're digressing, but I do admit I'm probably gonna buy some hot dogs next time I'm at the store after hearing all that. That sounds absolutely delicious. I do like various vegetables on top of the hot dog. That is nice. But I can also just do a ketchup mustard. Do you wanna hit it, Thomas?
It's a chapter called Sleep from a story called Steps in Slow Motion. And it's just the first couple of paragraphs. They say it can be so quiet that you can hear the grass grow. Well, I hear it grow all the time. Not just when people tuck in their cars at night, all the time. I hear the rats gnawing on electric wires behind panels and birds bustling in their nests. I hear the grass grow and I hear it wither. I hear falling leaves hitting the walkways in autumn and the snow fall in winter. My nights are laced with sound, breathing. Walls cooling at dusk, distressing from heat at dawn. Buddies shifting in their covers, the tingle of lovers laughing. Others spewing words at each other. I hold my breath. I curl up. I minimize entropy. Try not to listen to the voice behind the brakes. It all came gradually, not suddenly overnight. At some point when I came of age, or something shortly after, my senses intensified. No, not my senses, my hearing. A constant buzzing noise year-round. I have my furniture arranged so that it vibrates as little as possible. Materials heavy, so as not to resonate freely. My dog died. It barked. And that's it.
Okay. Well, I'm glad we have you online. I'm going to start here because I want to ask you about those last two sentences. My dog died, it barked.
That's too much. It was too much. You got to kill the dog because it's so, if your hearing is so sensitive, right? I don't know. Well,
that's how I read it, but is that what he meant?
Yeah. It was initially, but then the challenge came with the story, which twisted the entire thing around. So in fact, the guy talking was chased by a landlord as a kid through the basement of a building. And then because the dog barked, trying to keep it from barking, he accidentally smothered the dog and killed it. And that's a pivot point of part of the story. But it wasn't the beginning. The beginning was that it just barked too much.
Yeah. So it leaves you wondering what really happened. What I sort of struck me when listening to that is that it felt like it was full of, you know, vivid imagery, but really you were just talking about one sense. You're just talking about, you know, they often say to draw you into a scene, use all the senses. And I felt like you were doing that, but it was really just all, you know, what he heard. So it was a very lovely couple of paragraphs from that standpoint.
Well, thank you.
I agree. It instantly got me engaged. I have tinnitus anyway, so I'm familiar with the buzz behind your ears, but the descriptions that you used, I could picture it all. I could hear the falling leaves.
Yeah. And then on a lighter note, I recently broke down and bought AirPods, and there's a transparency mode on them. I don't know if anyone else has those. And it sounds like you can hear the grass growing. You can hear every crinkle of every leaf. So I was like, wow, that's just like the weird transparency mode on AirPods. It's possible it can happen to you too.
The whole paragraph about this, the sensory, was so very well written and intricate that it made a very good contrast when you ended that part with two very, very short lines that implied something more than what they said. So that was very well crafted.
Thank you.
Now, I was going to say that I read the rest of the chapter, and very definitely there's a reason, Thomas, why we keep inviting you on, especially for the Halloween podcast.
Well, it was not only disturbing, I think, to read, it was certainly disturbing to write it. So.
Oh, yes, I will agree with that. First of all, whenever you write disturbing, you do disturbing very, very disturbing.
Thank you for the heads up on that, because I did read it too. So, it, you know, wasn't as shocking as it would have been. But yeah, I think sleep deprivation can certainly bring on the demons.
Yeah.
Ah, yes. There's a classic painting, The Sleep of Reason, which I think it's called, which has somebody lying in a bed with a demon crouching over them. I don't know if you've ever seen that picture.
I think I have.
For some reason, you know, somebody lying there in bed awake at night just always puts me in mind of that picture.
Well, that's a scary thought.
John, should we move on to your story? And do you have a joke?
I can give a joke and a prank that I once played. NASA decide to send a probe to the moon again. So they put on board the probe an astronaut and a chimp. The probe goes into orbit, lands on the moon, and the astronaut and the chimp open their sealed instructions. The chimp's instructions read, set up the seismometer, set up the magnetometer, monitor the solar radiation experiment in order to determine the effects of cosmic radiation upon the surface of the moon. The astronaut reads his sealed instructions. Feed the chimp.
Yeah. Oh, we know who the brains of the operation is, at least.
And I'll tell you, as engineers, we do some very specialist pranks. There was one year at work when I persuaded somebody who shall remain nameless in case he's listening to this podcast, and I don't want to embarrass him, but I told him one year that the reason his computer was running slow was because he'd got his cables all tangled up. And while the zeros were nice and round and they could go round the cable when it was all curled up, the ones, because they were all jagged, were getting caught up in the coils. It took him about 20 seconds to clock that. 20 seconds of pure joy on my part.
That's priceless.
As I've found, with being an engineer, all you have to do is look authoritative enough for just long enough to drag them in.
Well, that's sort of the basis of delivering any joke. Or any prank particularly, you have to, you know, keep a poker face. It's very hard for me to keep a poker face. I can't keep a joke going like that.
I hardly believe that.
All right, John, let's hear your story.
My story is one that I wrote for the weekend write-in for the prompt hard. and it's called Hard Times. How does that feel? You comfortable there? Abe's question was motivated by a genuine concern for his charge, but it seemed out of place in the darkness of the cellar. I mean, the burly man continued, we don't want things more unpleasant than they already are. The man who the remarks were addressed to shifted on his wooden chair, and the ropes holding him creaked from the changing tension. Unpleasant? He asked. I'm going to die, and you're worried about me being comfortable? Abe returned from the darkest corner of the cellar, bringing with him a metal tub stained by tin pest. There's no need to be like that. He set the tub down at the feet of the man in the chair. Look, friend, you ain't my friend. All right, have it your way. Mr. Pataki wants you dead, so you're going to die. End. But I'm one of those guys who thinks a dying man deserves some kind of consideration. Abe leaned closer to the man in the chair and lowered his voice. Confidentially, there were a few of the guys who were eager to volunteer for this. Too eager, if you know what I mean. The man in the chair shuddered. I think I might. Abe retreated back into the dim reaches of the cellar, his voice echoing off the brickwork. Yeah, well, nobody likes a scholar. He came back, cradling a dusty bag of concrete in his arms. But I don't hold grudges. Life's too short. More for some of us than others. In the gloomy cellar, it was difficult to see Abe's face, but the tone of his voice betrayed his awkwardness. I'm sorry, I wasn't thinking. Then he became more cheerful. But you see what I mean? Like I said, it could be worse. Now, he stood back. Are you sure there's nothing you want? He gestured at the items on the floor around the two men. The tub, the cement mix, the buckets of water. This is going to take some time to get right. The seated man thought for a moment. How about you let me stretch my legs for a bit? Funny guy, Abe laughed. No can do, though. I like a man with a sense of humor, but no, I can't take the risk. I wouldn't want to be keeping you company more than I want to. How long are you going to be then? Abe shrugged. You can't hurry craftsmanship. There's an art to mixing this stuff. You should have seen the fuss when the last guy got it wrong. On a job like this, trust me, the cement needs to be hard.
I noticed you also had a misunderstanding, or not a misunderstanding of words, but poor, you know, kind of a play on words. Utilized a play on words, you know, like life's not short, life's too short to hold a grudge. Speak for yourself.
I can't help the odd one, the odd pun.
Yes, yes. I like the character in this. I like the assassin character a lot.
He has a lot of character.
Well, I always think that in gangster movies, you know, the torpedoes, the hard guns, they get really short shrift, but give them their chance to shine, I think.
Well, you did that well. I enjoyed right at the beginning where it opens up with concern. And you think, well, at least Abe wants to help this guy. But then by the second paragraph, you clear that up pretty quickly.
You can call him a classy assassin.
That's a trademark. That's a trademark of yours, John, the classy assassin.
Just because I have sympathy with them.
Now, I have a question for you, though. Has Abe tried this before? Because a tub full of cement with a man standing in it is pretty heavy.
I did actually do some research into this whenever I wrote it.
Of course you did.
The internet can tell you anything, I suppose.
Oh, ruining arguments since 1998. That's Google for you. And I found out there was only ever one documented case of concrete overshoes ever. But somehow it got to be this real gangster trope.
There's only one documented concrete shoes?
It's one documented case. There may have been others, but just one documented.
Wow. Well, they must have found, the other ones must have found really deep lake.
Or maybe they tried lifting the bucket of cement and said, no, that's too heavy. Heck with this. We'll chop him off at the knees.
Yeah.
Well, the second case was actually when he was found, the guy, it was because the cement hadn't cured enough before they throw him in.
Oh, so it's a true, in some ways, John, this is a true story. Or alludes to the true concrete shoes. So he was dead, but he was not sunk enough. That's how they found him.
Sometimes I worry what Big Brother might think if he looked at my browsing history when I'm doing research.
You've got the perfect excuse. You're a writer.
Yeah, can look at anything. Very good. Well, thank you, everybody, for doing a live recording. It's always fun to talk to people and hear their story from directly as it's being spoken. It was a lot of fun.
Well, thanks for inviting us.
Well, I agree. It was a lot of fun.
Good. Good. All right. I'm just going to stop the... Oh, wait a second. The recording stopped again.
Oh, no.
No, it's still going.
Oh, I tried to do an April Fool's and it didn't work.
Thank you for listening to the Weekend Write-In Podcast, co-hosted and produced by John Nedwell and Sovan Drake. For more episodes and links to our authors, go to www.weekendwritein.wordpress.com. Royalty-free music by FusslineStudios.com, BBC Sound Effect Archives, and freesound.org.
Well, that's the last of them. I suppose we'd better tidy up the studio.
That's the problem with having friends over. You spend all the time getting things nice for them. Then when you go, you have to get things nice again.
But you know the good thing about doing this in our studio?
No, what?
It's just so easy to tidy up. All you need is the right sound effect and...
John?